seems appropriate to introduce them. So my name is Ngaba Ngomo from the African National Congress. I chair this committee on science and technology. In fact, when it started, I started with it. Before it used, this committee used to be a committee on art, culture, science and technology. When it separated, I'm the one who established it. So I am very well versed about its issues. So you are in good hands here. Right. And then I've got my committee secretary, Shanaz Isaacs, whom you was liaising with you up until today. And she's the person that you'll be actually looking forward to. If should there be anything that you need our committee to look into. And behind you here was our researcher, Renee. She's also a marine scientist. So she can also be of help if at all you become too scientific for us. She can explain things. We don't know many things in science, but then maybe if you try to be too harsh, we'll tell Renee to tell us. Right. I'll start from the member here, so let them introduce themselves.
Afternoon. My name is Langala Kemkiza from ANC.
Afternoon. My name is Sana Mulao from the Congress of the People.
Hi, Peter Smith, IFP.
Hi, I'm Marion Shin from the Democratic Alliance.
Good afternoon, Sandy Kanyan, DA.
I think everybody also there related must introduce themselves there.
Zona Lula from PMG.
Rob Terrell, Minister.
Okay. I think the leader of that delegation can then introduce us.
Marjorie Pius, I'm acting DG for the moment, and also then leading this delegation, bringing Tia on their maiden flight or engagement with the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee. We have with us the chairperson, the executive of the CEO, and one or two others from legal and so on, and I will hand over to Dr. Nathalie to introduce our delegation, and then we have one or two other DST colleagues, acting DDG and chief director, related to this portfolio, and they will also introduce themselves.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much, Chair, for welcoming us. I'm Namthila Ramphele. I'm the Chair of the Technology and Innovation Agency, and I'm accompanying Dr. Nhlanhla Mhlomi, who is the acting CEO, and I'll hand over to him to introduce his comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Nhlanhla Mhlomi, the interim CEO of the TIA, and I have two colleagues with me from the interim executive, Fadlu Hendricks, who is three positions from me, and Mr. Putana Mboniswa, who is responsible for strategy and alignment.
Did you hear about the two gentlemen here?
The two gentlemen here from CSP, one, two, and then Mr. Hendricks is number three from me, and number four is Mr. Mboniswa, but they will introduce themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Salman Swami. I'm the acting DDG for Research, Development and Innovation at DSP. And my colleague on my left is Mr. Stephen Ratzasi. He's the Chief Director for Innovation Instruments.
I think we have once come and presented here. I remember you now.
Yes, I'm also the chief director for Space Science and Technology.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that's why I remember you now. Yeah, okay, yeah. I remember now, yeah. Okay, now welcome all of you. I think we've just been joined by another member. Can you introduce yourself? We've already introduced ourselves.
Thanks, Chairperson. My apology for arriving late. Had to go and give an apology at another meeting. Good day, everybody. My name is Bobby Mujumi, a member of the committee. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Shum. Yeah, I think without wasting our any more time, let us just hit the road running. There you are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and afternoon to the members of the Portfolio Committee. Before I start, may I get an indication of how long we can take in doing the presentation so that I can calibrate my speed?
According to the schedule there, you have up to 15:15, which is 4 hours. And then we said a big break, you can allow yourself up.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you again. My presentation is divided into so this one has better. For the conspiracy to get me off my stride. the presentation is really divided into five sections. I noticed that in the letter that was sent to us, one minute to really do a bit of a recap on the mandate of the TIA. So I will do a bit of a recap and then give you some sense of where the board is at in terms of crafting a strategic vision of intern for the TIA, followed by a strategic architecture discussion, which is really the meat of the business plan, which I hope was presented to you. And I think what you will realize in the business plan is that it talks a lot about how to create an organization pretty much from scratch, because one of the challenges that we've had is that while we're merging entities that have been existing for the past decade, in crafting a new vision for the TIA, we also have to realize that we are migrating into an undefined territory. So you've got to strike a balance between building a new organization while trying to maintain and consolidate the achievements of the entities that are migrating into TIA. The next section of the business plan was really about the consolidated business plan, particularly because these entities that we are migrating into TIA already have business models, already have business plans. And so the challenge there was really to try and give some form to those business plans and ensuring that the obligations and the contractual commitments that they've made are maintained and adjusted going into the future. And the last part is really the strategic investment portfolio, which is our way of saying that in addressing the challenge of the innovation chasm, what are the few programs or projects that we can choose to arrange around a strategic investment portfolio that addresses some challenges within the South African context. And I'll close off by giving you an operational update of where we are in terms of establishing the TIA organization. So as a first step, one would want to remind the members of why the TIA. And I think this slide really encapsulates what the challenge is, in that as a country we produce a lot of local knowledge in the research and development space. We have some of the best universities in the world, best science councils, and yet we are struggling in converting that knowledge and those knowledge outputs into utilizable and usable products As a result, she imports a lot of technology-based products into our industry, and that results in the negative balance of payments and with the deficit. I mean, I'm thinking about 2 years ago, the statistic that pharmaceutical contributed about a third of the deficit in the balance of payment, largely because we import all of our pharmaceutical components, is a serious indictment on why we need to accelerate the closing of that innovation chasm. So that is our mandate, and I thought I would put that right up as a way of kicking off the discussion. To recap the mandate, taken directly from the Act itself, the object of the agency is to support the state in stimulating and intensifying technological innovation in order to improve economic growth and quality of life of all South Africans. We've inserted by supporting the development and acquisition of technological innovations, that highlight in red is to indicate that TIA on its own is not going to be developing and exploiting technological innovation, but it is a support mechanism. It will assist those entities or those organizations that are better placed at developing and exploiting that technological innovation. And as a board, we've set ourselves a vision of building a world-class innovation agency, meaning that from the way we do our support of the development and exploitation of technology, we need to implement world-class best practices in the way we operate as an organization in order to achieve this mandate. And that's what we do through leveraging strategic partnerships both locally and internationally, because as an organization, we cannot hope to do everything. We've got to, from the get-go, understand that the way to achieve our mandate is through partnerships. It's through leveraging those strategic partnerships with the other players in the innovation ecosystem and the economic development ecosystem. So the TIA Act really frames our mandate as well as the context. In terms of the mission that we've set ourselves, we've got four strategic pillars. The one that goes without saying is to use appropriately structured financial and non-financial interventions. We are placing equal emphasis on both the financial and non-financial ones, because a lot of the gaps are really in the non-financial space. Money on its own is not going to solve the problems of bridging that innovation chasm. Human capital development, particularly for innovation management, and this has to be done in partnership with the National Research Foundation, the Higher Education Institute, and the Human Capital Development Program of the Department of Science and Technology. But as it's here, being at the forefront of innovation management, we are better placed to provide some intellectual leadership in that space, particularly around skills like intellectual property development, intellectual property management, and those skills that are peculiar to managing the innovation continuum. Developing a culture of innovation within the country in general in partnership with other players in the ecosystem, as well as leveraging local and international partnerships. Our strategic objectives are all highlighted in red. One point to make is that it talks to economic development domain. So we would leverage capital influence through technological innovation and transfer, support the development of new products and services, grow the number of technology-based startups and SMEs, as well as supporting key industries to enhance their global competitiveness. What it says really says that to be able to traverse the innovation chasm, we do a lot of good work on the research and development space, but we've got to now focus on the firm-level innovation. How do we bring those into the firm? Because it is the firms that play in the economic development space. It is the firms that make the products available to the markets and the drugs, if you're talking about pharmaceuticals, available to the doctors and the pharmacists' job. But while we say these things, we need to say upfront that the immediate challenge of the TIA is to build an organization that can deliver on those strategic imperatives. There are very high-level imperatives. They represent the future destination where we want to find ourselves. But in the immediate, we need to be building an organization that can deliver on this strategic imperative. And that's what the first part of the business plan really talks to. How do you build an organization that can deliver on this? Just a quick heads up on the business planning process itself. We used, obviously, the mission and strategic objectives as a way of framing how we went about building the business case and the business plan of the year, starting with the risk and SWOT analysis to determine the challenges and major risks, particularly during the migration phase where all these entities that are migrating into TIA were being shepherded into this new environment. And then identifying a range of opportunities within our portfolios as well as external threats. And then the next step was for the board to set realistic timelines and achievable milestones instead of going all over the place to try and achieve things that are not achievable within our resources and the constraints of time. So we have had to moderate our expectations to fit those resources and capabilities. And we used a balanced scorecard methodology to build the business plan so that we could be able to monitor and evaluate the implementation as it happens. And so we present a business plan that has an element of a balanced scorecard approach as well as the consolidated business plans of the migrating entities. And hopefully this will allow us to address the innovation chasm, preferably looking at consolidating the current portfolio and determining the position of the TIA in the ecosystem. It's very important that from the onset we know where our strategic position should be instead of trying to be everything to everybody in the system. We cannot possibly be that with our limited, and we would also set ourselves up for failure if we did that. And then the market linkages, how do we fast track the entry into the market using the strategic investment portfolio? So in terms of the strategic vision and intent, the key thing, and I've said this over and over again, I know it will start to sound like propaganda, but it needs to be emphasized, that our first challenge is really to build an organization focusing on governance, HR, finance, technology, innovation, management system, technology, and SME development, as well as branding. To have an organization that can represent the aspirations that are encapsulated in that edge. And that for us is what we're setting ourselves as an immediate goal, so that when we start delivering on the other objectives, we have an organization that is geared and that is capable of delivering on all of those things. And over the period of, say, the next year, the next financial year and year two, we'll start restructuring and consolidating our portfolio, the investment portfolio that we've inherited, focusing on new funding instruments and support modalities so that they can be fast-tracked across that innovation chasm, particularly looking at synergies. Because with emerging biotechnology, for example, manufacturing portfolios, there are synergies that could be extracted out of that, where you are really moving from the high end of the spectrum in terms of research, development, and innovation to the market end. And therefore, we need to be looking at how we can synergize as well as leverage the coming together of all these programs. And hopefully, we should be in a position to start delivering the first products into the market from the strategies that we're inheriting by the year 2012-2013. Year 3, it's a tall order, but it's an order that we hope to be able to meet. Our risk analysis, which is presented in the business plan, has provided a comprehensive framework in terms of the risk analysis. And we've made a distinction between the risks that are associated with the migration process into a stable environment and merging entities into an undefined territory. We've also provided some a set of mitigating strategies that have really been used to define our business plan, particularly the set of activities that we've prioritized in the next year in building the organization. And then it also sets out the key operational priorities. I've given a list of the 9 risk categories. These risk categories, you can basically frame them in any way. But what we've decided is that we'll frame them as strategic risk, governance risk, human capital, financial, legal and regulatory, stakeholder and communication, marketing, political, information technology, and operational platform. The reason why we frame that is such that when we create or when we design the organizational structure, we're able to assign them to define the portfolios within the organizational structure itself and within the way that the organization works. And so the activity matrix that is at the end of the business plan, the first session of the business plan, is really derived from this activities, the mitigating strategies that we've pulled out for the risk, as well as the strategic framework, which then forms the balance scorecard framework to be able to monitor and evaluate our progress as we move forward. One key issue that one needs to highlight in the strategic risk category is the issue of funding. It's a key issue because, as I said earlier on, our challenge in putting together a business plan and a framework that seeks to achieve a balance between a new strategic trust and while you are also continuing with the funding or business as usual from the inherited portfolio. And so we are going to be in a constant situation where there are tensions between our new strategic trust and maintaining the integrity of the portfolios that are moving into the tier. And so our budget framework will, at least in the immediate period, will be always misaligned to our strategic vision. The first analysis, really, we've done it starting with the definition of the desired stage, and we take that definition from the Act itself, which is to stimulate and intensify technological innovation. And we've used the classical approach of strength being attributed to the organization itself, so its internal facing, as well as the weaknesses and opportunities and threats being issues that are on the outside of the organization, the external conditions, from the organization. And what the SWOT analysis really was looking to do, at least in our context in the business planning process, was to try and give us a sense of what we needed to prioritize in terms of our business plan, in terms of delivering on our initial mandate, as well as saying that as we evolve into the future, how do we exploit some of these insights that have come out of the SWOT analysis. So the SWOT analysis, we've given some of the high-level ones. In analysis terms, we really have a mutual beneficial partnership with some of the funding agencies. We have a diverse group and range of professionals because the entities and the programs that we are inheriting are well developed. They have developed the skills, they have developed a lot of expertise and experience in the technology innovation space. And we've got funding available from the entities that are migrating into TIER and a broad portfolio of opportunities that span the entire value chain. Under the weaknesses, one weakness to highlight is the unclear PFMA exemptions, because what is happening is that the entities have been operating in the PFMA environment, but some of them that we are inheriting have been operating in breach of the PFMA because they were not meant to be adhering to the PFMA fully. And as TIER and as a 3A scheduled entity, we are going to have those challenges of from the day one of being in breach of the PFMA. And that will require some negotiation with National Treasury. And in terms of the there are opportunities for inbound technology as a lever for industrial development, as well as opportunities to utilize R&D tax incentives as well as the venture capital tax incentives to be able to increase the size of financial resources that are available for the year. The threats are really around the poor coordination, alignment, and potential misunderstanding of the TIER strategic role. I think there are a lot of messages out there and perceptions out there in public about what TIER needs to do. And I take you back to the point that I made about the need for us to define what our position and location is in that ecosystem so that there is no misunderstanding of what our role should really be about. Otherwise, if we don't do that, we're setting ourselves up for failure if we try and be everything to everyone. So in terms of the strategic perspectives, there's four of them, and all four of them talk to one or two pillars of our mission. The first one being really the stakeholder perspective, The main issue to clear out of this is that as an organization that is funded from the public, we need to be able to define what our shareholder wants from us. And our shareholder grouping will really define a civil society itself, parliament and its organs, as well as the Department of Science and Technology, which is really a proxy for parliament and its organs. The beneficiaries of the chair offerings, which is the national system itself and all the associated players in that system, internal stakeholders and strategic partners. More important, we've got to define an appropriate return on investment framework for the key stakeholder, for the shareholder, which is not just based on the financial matrix, but it's based on a broad range of indicators that are aligned to our national priorities and the positioning of our instruments in that innovation chasm. And the critical tools to do that would really be around our communications as well as strong positive branding. The second one is the financial perspective. We've given a number of programs or initiatives that we will be embarking on, some of which we've already started. The first one being the budgeting model that is aligned to our strategic thrust. An appropriate ROI framework based on a set of KPIs that are agreed between ourselves and our shareholder. Treasury management capabilities, as well as the ability to raise third party funding and the necessary exemptions. In terms of the budget, I need to just highlight this for the members. This is the budget of the TR on a 3-year framework. The first year shows a deficit. It shows a deficit because we have not been given an allocation or a provision to set up the organization from scratch. So in terms of our budget, we're coming short by 76 million, and that goes to set up cost of the tier, because we've got to balance the set up cost with the investments that are committed by the entities that are migrating into tier. And so the investments that are migrating into tier take up the majority of that budget. Over a period of time, in year two and year three, the situation changes because a lot of the setup costs are once-off costs. Things like establishing a national office and a regional office, things like establishing a new corporate structure and so on and so forth. This has to be taken out of the budget of the migrating entities because there is no separate provision for that. However, the way to mitigate that is to have a very strong treasury management capabilities. It's really going to be a cash flow management issue as opposed to ending up with a negative at the end of the financial year. Innovation, learning, and growth. As a knowledge organization, this is critical. People and knowledge are our key assets. All of the issues around non-financial intervention is really centered around our knowledge assets and our people, the tacit knowledge that they have within themselves. Our immediate challenge in migrating seven entities with different cultures, different languages, and so on and so forth is to really establish a knowledge management framework that establishes a shared language, because we cannot begin to have any strategic coherence if we do not have a shared language among ourselves, and we cannot hope to achieve internal operational integrity. So that is a strategic operational initiative has been prioritized. Human capital development, particularly internally, to bring our staff up to the level that is required of a world-class innovation agency. And some of the other issues are around new modalities or customized modalities for business advisory services, which is really around the technology nurseries. The modalities that the Department of Science and Technology has been using around centers of competence, appropriate inbound technology methodologies, as well as technology development infrastructure, such as technology platforms and those sort of things. It goes without saying that, as I said, in the next 12 to 18 months, we have to establish an organization that works. We've gone a long way over the past 6 months or so to establish a policy environment within TIA that is compliant with the relevant legislation, starting from TIA Act, PFMA, Employment Equity, PIA, and other legislation. So we have a set of policies, financial and human resources policies, that the board has engaged with and has approved to establish that environment. Performance management framework, particularly in line with the monitoring and evaluation approach that government is adopting at the moment. A risk management function, internal and financial, to eliminate the risk of audit failures. Master systems plan, as an organization that is diverse, that is geographically diverse, and that is inheriting people from across the nation, we need an ERP system that is going to assist us in delivering on our mandate. COVID, which I will show you in a minute, that talk to the new positioning, particularly putting in an economist portfolio, because one of the reasons why we have an innovation chasm, and I alluded to it earlier on, is the fact that we've not paid a lot of attention to what the market drivers are, what the market needs are, and therefore within the tier family of migrating entities, the economist portfolio has been lacking, as well as the new business processes that are required to take us forward. We will also begin a process of business process mapping within the next quarter, particularly as a driver of change management, because as our staff or employees grapple with this new strategic direction, they need to own the processes that we're going to deliver this on. And that's why the PPM process is being used as a way of driving efficiencies and improving performance, but also as a change management driver. So in terms of the functional overview, and I do believe this would have come here before because it is in the business case that was presented to National Treasury. These are some of the activities and service offerings that TIA is looking at, from corporate services, strategic partnerships and enabling services, fund management, technology development and innovation, as well as technology commercialization itself. And one thing that I want to highlight in the next slide is really the fact that our delivery mechanism is focused on excellence in technology innovation, which is our core competence. And I don't think in terms of what we're inheriting, we are too shady in this space. We have been doing a lot of good, world-class technology innovation. Where we seem to have dropped the ball is on strategic sector management, which is now the economic or market sectors that are addressed by the technology innovation core competence. And therefore, we're introducing this element of sector management to define what technology innovation should be about. It should not be the other way around. What we think has been happening is that the team has really been working the dog, because technology innovation is a means to an end. It's not an end on its own. And some of the modalities, one modality is technology business support and advisory services, which is the technology necessary modality, where we look at the essential infrastructure. TIA is inheriting a lot of infrastructure around the technology stations from the Chimisano Trust, technology platforms, office and laboratory space. That infrastructure is already there. There are some gaps where we would make investment, but we have a lot of this. Where we seem to, or where we need to archive is in the expert services, such as IT management and commercialization management, technology transfer, capacity and infrastructure, inbound technologies, and so on and so forth, so that we deliver at the end viable technology-based enterprises. This is one of the modalities that we are adopting and that we're going to be looking at utilizing and driving the journey across the innovation garden. The second modality is the inbound technology transfer, where really we're looking at both internal and external. But our internal and external is really directed at firm level, because it's from a realization that when you invest in technology innovation, particularly in startups, it's very difficult for the startups to have all the intellectual property required to come up with a market a product. And therefore, they would need to probably have the capability to absorb IP from elsewhere, whether that's from the research councils or from other companies in the system, as well as external offshore sources, as well as assessing the local technology and manufacturing capability. That modality really looks at firm level. It doesn't look at a system level. And so that you can fast track that journey across the product development journey, as well as the improved manufacturing capability. We are fortunate in that not only are we inheriting a portfolio which looks at the high end of that spectrum, but we also are inheriting programs like Sumisano that are at the other end, at the industry end of that spectrum. So the next couple of slides are really are about the consolidation of the various programs. The first one is the biotechnology portfolio. In the biotechnology portfolio, we're talking about four entities, which were the different trusts that were located in Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and Western Cape, as well as the National Plant Biotechnology Trust. And what we've done in the past several months is to really start the consolidation of that portfolio into one portfolio that makes sense from a national perspective. And we've also gone further to start defining it around the market sector. So while in the past you would define maybe the biotechnology on the basis of the biotech portfolio on the basis of the technology domains, whether that's high throughput biology, the omics sector, or whether that's the fermentation and so on and so forth, we've turned that around and said actually it is to serve our mandate and to service that innovation concept, you've got to start defining it from the market sector. Hence the approach of defining them as health, agri and industrial sectors. That process is underway, and I think we are very, very near completion of that. And as an output of that, as an outcome of that, we're beginning to develop strategies for accelerated market entry for some of these. Some of them will discuss later on in the area of the strategic investment portfolio and the high impact projects. The
new member who has just been in our committee. I'm not telling you now, he's in the committee almost. I think he's telling me this of that because he's the first time to
have a part of the committee. Yes. And Chair, first of all, I'm honored to thank you very much.
Okay. The next one is really the Sumisano, which is the program of technology stations focused on manufacturing, especially for SMMEs. It's the closest of our program to the intentions of the Industrial Policy Action Plan. It provides the engineering capabilities that are required for industrial and in some of these high technology programs that we have. Their recent focus has really been on agro-processing and chemicals, primary and secondary manufacturing, as well as tooling and metal casting. They also provide an opportunity for the TIA to rapidly establish a national footprint, because they are driven through the industries of technology. And some of the forthcoming initiatives within the Sumisano space are the, a station in Mpumalanga focusing on agro-processing, a technology station in the Northern Cape focusing on integrated manufacturing for agro-food and mining, as well as Northwest looking at manufacturing advisory center for SMEs supplying mining, the mining industry and other sectors. The next one is the Advanced Manufacturing Technology Strategy, which is really focused on advanced light materials and electronics, as well as advanced production technologies. It's predominantly an applied research endeavor based at science councils and higher education institutes, and the funding modality is mainly grant funding. There's a strong focus on human capital development. It has partnerships with industries such as the Automotive Industry Development Program. And it also has the opportunities and has programs around the Fab Lab, which could promote the culture of innovation. The third one is our oldest funding instrument, which is the Innovation Fund. It's predominantly SIP funding. It's a fund of last resort for technology startups, and it's meant to reduce the risk, the investment risk for other players in the funding space, such as the venture capitalists and private equity players. It has no definite technology sector focus, but it has tended to focus on metals and materials manufacturing and renewable energy technologies in the recent past, and has a number of funding programs. Within the TIA family, it has the strongest IP and commercialization capabilities that have been developed over a period of about 10 years. And it has some of our most visible investments, such as the electric car, the jewel, and so on and so forth. And we're hoping that we would use that as an anchor for future plant development. The next two are really about agency management, which is really programs where, as an organization, we are beginning to grapple with them, and but we are going to be providing management capabilities for funding as well as human resource management. This is in the health, innovation, and energy space, and we hope that over the next several months we'll begin to engage with those of programs and migrate them fully into TIA once our strategic issues are aligned. I will jump these two slides because I'm looking at the time. It's just another way of emphasizing our sector-driven approach to see that traditionally we focused on technology innovation as a driver of our activities with a limited socio-economic impact. If we turn this around and we use technology as a tool as opposed to it being an end on its own, to drive market sectors as well as societal needs. And the slide really is to indicate that we are not throwing anything out of the window, what we have inherited. All we're doing, we're organizing it into an organized way of delivering the value that we are expected to deliver. One highlight of the sector-driven strategy that we talk about in our strategic investment portfolio is that we're looking at health, and this is just an example. We have started to group the various projects and investments that we've invested in our portfolio into a definable market or go to the market continuum, starting from assay development, which would really traditionally fall under high throughput biology, to testing service and manufacturing, particularly around the diagnostics, and then moving those through the value chain of commercialization to testing distributors and customers. These investments are investments that are currently within our stable. And what we're doing, we're reorganizing them so that they start delivering value in the market. So we're not talking about things that are outside of our space. Our impact project, and as I said earlier on, we set us a task of looking at our portfolio and trying to ensure that we organize it in such a way that it starts delivering value to society as soon as it is practically possible. And the way of doing that is really to look at the synergies in the portfolio and to start leveraging those synergies and see if there are modalities for fast-tracking goals. It's important to note that things like the Chimisano and the AMTS program provide us with engineering capabilities for product manufacturing so that we pull stuff out of the high-tech innovation into the firm level. The portfolios that we've looked at the moment are the biotechnology one, because we started with this one a few months ago. Some of the opportunities are really around consolidating it to start delivering in the area of HIV and TB drugs. And these would probably, we're looking at having something in the marketplace in about 2 to 3 years, as indicated in an earlier slide. And it would be the first drugs that have come out of a developing country environment, innovative drugs. And they will be pulled out of the portfolio, as I said. Diagnostics, the issue of diagnostics is a big one, particularly with our health care challenges, HIV and TB, and the importation of all of these diagnostics. Again, out of our portfolio, in consolidating it, we're looking at lead times of up to 18 months to start delivering products in the market. So, Mr. Chair, we do apologize that we'll be here next year, and we'll be talking about another 6 to 12 months before we can deliver anything. In the agri space, agri-biotech space, starch production coming out of the project within the plant biotechnology portfolio, bioethanol production, again, plant biotechnology portfolio that is driven by plant bio, bioethanol from sugar beet, from plant bio as well as an ICT project that is looking at delivering networks, cloud computing, and digitization of content for primary school and high school kids in areas where there could be broadband access. And as a conclusion on the high-impact project, it's a strategic program of the board, so it has direct ownership by the board, and we are in the process of putting together a business plan. Obviously, it will require additional funding because, as I pointed out earlier on, our funding for the next year is already committed from the historical investment. The last couple of slides is really to give you an update on the operationalization of TIA. Just to remind everybody that the board was only inaugurated in July 2009, so it's been in place for about 9 months now. And we are in the process of looking for a CEO. The interim CEO was appointed in October 2009, started in October. So a lot of the work that has been done has been in the past 4 or 5 months. The corporate organogram was approved by the board only in December, at the board meeting of December. And we've already migrated 3 entities, the Innovation Fund, Sumitomo Trust, as well as the Advanced Manufacturing, Manufacturing Technology Strategy, which was migrated in February. The biotechnology instrument, which is the 4 trust that I mentioned earlier on, will be officially migrated into the TIA environment legally on the 1st of October 2010. In terms of the update, in terms of recruitment, we have appointed a CFO as well as an enterprise risk manager because we thought these were high priority areas. The other members of the executive, which is the chief economist, chief technology innovation officer, chief people and culture, and the regional group executives, we've commenced the interview process for those today, and we hope to be able to start the appointment process from mid-April. And the idea really is that all of the appointments for the TIA regional and central structures will be finalized by the end of April. So we will have, hopefully, a fully functional structure by the end of April. And we've really prioritized the recruitment and human resource development because all the other issues that we spoke about or that we speak about in the business plan will require warm bodies to drive. And in terms of the national office, looking at setting that up in the innovation hub, the new corporate structure will be up and running on the 1st of May 2010. The provincial offices are being set up in the areas where the current entities are occupying space. So in the Western Cape, where the Cape Power Technology Trust is based, that's where our office is. In KwaZulu-Natal, it's where the Life Lab is. Gauteng is in Centurion, where the Innovation Fund. We've minimized the issue of trying to spend a lot of money building new offices, and we've simply taken over the lease that we have with those entities. And we're currently negotiating with partners, particularly the development finance institute, as well as the investment promotion agencies in the 3 provinces, so that we achieve very quickly a national footprint. Other issues that are going to be developed are around the operational model, the monitoring and evaluation framework, as well as the enterprise performance management framework. Thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable Smith there. I've got the Honorable Shin, Lower Kalyan, in that order.
Thanks, Chair. I must say I enjoyed the presentation, and I wish you the greatest success. I really am excited by this project, and it's one that deserves to succeed. It's a really good idea. Just a question, basic questions. I mean, one hopes in this migration of all these bodies into one that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. So, I mean, one often has all sorts of institutional and cultural clashes and all sorts of things happening in emerging institutions. So putting 10 into one, what's your gut feel as to how it's panning out in terms of, you know, 2 plus 2 equaling 5 instead of 3? Then, how do you intend deploying all the people that are going to be coming in from the different organizations? I mean, I presume the new structure is not going to reflect the existing 10 entities. So some people will be you'll pull people from different sectors into different fields. I'm not quite sure how the organization is structured from a functional perspective, but I think maybe you rushed through a slide and it was there, I just didn't see it properly. You said that the first product you're anticipating in 2012. I was just wondering, do you mean the first product that's being initiated through the tier? Because if you mean the first product, irrespective of where it comes from, I would have thought there's all sorts of stuff in the pipeline already, and the stuff in the pipeline could come out at any time. But maybe I misunderstood what you meant. Maybe you meant stuff initiated from, you know, de novo through the tier process. A question on I wasn't quite clear. I mean, partly in fact because your mission starts off. The object of the agency being to support the state in stimulating X, Y, and Z. I mean, the object isn't to stimulate and intensify innovation, but to support the state in doing so. And I wasn't quite sure what the relationship between tier is and, say, the private sector generally. If we look at our RDP spend of 1% of GDP, about 60%, I think this figure roughly, is through the private sector. So what sort of engagement have you had with the private sector in respect of your functioning? I'm not even sure how valid a question that is, but I imagine in terms of levering funding in trying to target particular interventions that will have the best value at the firm level, you'd have to have some sort of forum, how does that work? I was a bit puzzled by the budget, but maybe it's just pure naivety on my part. I can't remember what the slide was, but you had a three-year slide with, say, 450 million in year one and 350 million year two and 300 million. I mean, those investments come from the migrating organizations. I would have thought that if organizations are migrating to you, in year one, all their investments come into the pot, and that's year one, the whole lot's there. How do you get another pool of investments in year two and year three from the same source? That puzzles me, but I'm sure it's a very simple explanation. And then lastly, two quick ones. The high impact project, I think, is very, very important. I mean, it's less innovation because you say it's expired IP stuff, but does that include solar or alternate energy? Because we seem to have a paucity of people applying their minds to the matter in this country, and a lot of it is old technology but just not being implemented. And finally, when will the migration be completed? I think you said the four organizations have been brought on board so far. What's the process for the remainder? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. This really is a mammoth task that you folks have got, and I think it's fantastic that in the time you've been available that you've got so far. And I think what sort of overwhelmed me when I went through this document was how many of these little organizations are out there that you're actually pulling all together. And so my sort of immediate task was surely not all of these will survive. And I know that you said earlier that you weren't going to be, leaving anything by the wayside. But surely there's a lot of consolidation that can take place between all these organizations. And I was thinking, particularly in the health portfolio, there seems to be an awful lot of, I forget how many people are actually involved in developing drugs for TB and HIV. Now surely there can be some consolidation there or some focus on which are the most viable products. If you are thinking along that way, how are you going to do it? How are you going to make your decisions? And another question sort of stemming also from what Peter asked was, surely you're not going to keep all the people, because the more consolidation is, the more sort of streamlining of roles happen. So is there going to be down the line some retrenchments, people moving off, some sort of bean counting going on there. Then another one was sense of urgency is there for these projects to become financially viable, for them to actually find their market space? Because there's an awful lot of very good ideas out there, but not all of them are commercially successful or going to be commercially successful. How are you going to determine that? What kind of breathing space are you going to give these people to actually, you know, prove their business case that there is a market for them? And also then the question of the intellectual property. Who actually will own that? Will it be the little entities themselves? Will it be TIER? And then also registering a patent and then taking it to market can take an awfully long time. And obviously there's a renewal of the patent costs, or the cost of patent renewal. Who bears that cost as well? I think that'll do for now. Thank you.
Thank you. The chairman in his opening remarks mentioned that science and technology is not a very sexy subject. Your presentation was excellent, except you're talking to a particular grouping of people. Now, is TIER just another entity? You refer in your plan that your brand is not is new, it's not getting across. And I didn't pick that up anywhere in your presentation. I mean, can TIER become a well-known brand? And what happens to those entities? I get the sense from your analysis that some of these entities are resisting because obviously they're going to lose identity of who they are once they fall under the TIER umbrella. But, you know, I wouldn't say can TIER become a household name, but can it be accessible, you think, to the majority of people out there, to people where there are barriers when it comes to science and technology? Your language is quite interesting. Again, I think you talk to an exclusive community, you know, innovation chasm and change management driver. Who are you talking to is my question. Then I was quite interested to see that you have identified Itemba Pharmaceuticals as an ideal vehicle to develop HIV and TB drugs. Now, how did you do that? What was the criteria that was used? I mean, was there a process that was followed? What were the specific criteria where many companies looked at? Because I didn't think that is the job of TIER. I thought your vision and your mission statement does not say that you have to identify the vehicle, you have to support. So I was quite interested to see that you have identified. So I'd be interested to hear more on that. Now, does licensing also lie with TIER? You have here discussion to license several HIV drugs. If that is the case, then what is the role of the medicines control? There's a new term for it now, I forget. What is their role? What is the role of the Medical Research Council, you know? Again, I think it goes back to the entities, their positions, and their identity, and again, their role. And then my colleagues have asked, once you get everybody under this, under your umbrella, obviously there's going to be people who may have to step down from positions of authority, or, you know, I was the CEO, I was the head of department, or whatever. Do these positions translate into equal ones? What does your budget say in terms of retrenchment? And just on the budget, you spoke a lot about, you know, the fact that you don't have enough budget. But surely when this, and I wasn't part of this in 2008, but surely when this bill was coming, the act was coming before Parliament, the financial implications of the act were scrutinized. So So now to plead poverty, I think, is unfair. But anyway, I'd like to hear reflection on that. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is here under Technology Station Program. I'd just like to know, how do you drop your SMMEs also to become part? As you mentioned here, that using they are using the universities of technology as they say close. So can you explain to us how do you get them involved?
Thanks, Chair, but my first question, I think Honorable Smith has covered me, but the second question, you said at the moment we are in a process of interviewing certain people, but at the same time we are also in the process of merging some small institution into TIA. I'm trying to understand the rationale why, or are you considering those people that are leading those certain institutions at the moment to apply to certain positions, or you are just looking for a new blood and a new energy move somewhere without considering those people that might at the later stage lose certain position and things like that? Because that also might create some problems at a later stage. The other thing, under the high impact project, unfortunately I don't have page numbers yet, but under the biotechnology, agriculture, education, ICT, you raised something about Umlazi chosen as a location to connect the primary school. Is that project related to what they call it, Dinalese schools and things like that? And how you identify those schools in terms of saying, no, this is the right school? Because most of the departments at the moment are identifying schools, and you find that they're identifying schools in the same place, and then you end up all departments identifying same schools and doing the same project in those schools. Because that's my problem. If other department is identifying schools in Umlaz, other department should identify some schools in other areas. So I want also to get that information. But also I wanted to ask this, the process of merging, how long it will take in terms of your planning and things like that. And then I know you've tried to, but when I look at it. The last question, just for clarity. In your budget, under human resources, under there is 89,000 there in red. Why you wrote that 89,000 in red? Maybe if I may get some clarity, that's the stuff. Thank you.
I'm just gonna. Give one or two questions just to wind up what members have said. You know, my only problem about the presentation is because the agency is itself an innovation agency. Now, if you are going to continue business as usual, you will end up where all other entities are. Now, I think I would have expected that you'll tell us about the approach that you're going to use now to actually innovate the way forward. In other words, come with a new approach of translating technology into business. For instance, let me just give a few examples. The Chinese, for instance, have come up with what we call corporate system of innovation, which is what has been able to actually address questions of second economy of China significantly in terms of even employment, in terms of new products and so forth and so forth. Well, we've got other systems of innovation. Here in South Africa, we use the National System of Innovation. Now, I would have expected to tell us that how are you going to actually translate our National System of Innovation, which has not done exactly what you have identified, into what you want it to do now, what types of systems and approach that you are going to be using. For instance, we've talked a lot about manufacturing and things like that. I would have expected to hear something about, say, you did show some gaps there, but I thought you were going to say that this is, for instance, we have countries that have developed these manufacturing processes in this fashion using technology, and we are looking into tapping things to South Korea's approach of backward integration in manufacturing or re-engineering integration and so forth and so on. I've not heard anything around that. So I'm still thinking, are we not back in the same pot? Okay, I'd like to know from you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I will go from question one all the way down. I think the challenge of people moving into new positions and all of those things, the answer to that is that in migrating or merging these various entities and in crafting a new strategic direction for the tier, we've had to develop a corporate organogram that reflects where we want to move. And that is why I made the point around the sector approach, the sector-driven approach. I'm trying to find the slide. Okay, the sector-driven approach. So the people that we are inheriting, a lot of them will fit into definable areas in the new structure, but we are also recruiting from the outside, especially for those portfolios where we currently do not have internal skills. I must mention that one of the projects we did in November and December last year was to do a comprehensive internal skills audit and assessment. So part of the design of the new structure was the new strategic direction, as well as the issue of matching that to the skills that we have currently internally. And that is what informed our recruitment strategy. So we are paying attention to that. And I think, you know, just to follow up on that, there was a question on whether there are going to be any retrenchments. To the extent that we can, we are not foreseeing any need for retrenchment, because we think in building and in trying to address the challenge, we will need more people than we currently have. What we need to do based on the skills assessment, we need to upskill our people, we need to get our people, because it's very difficult to get people from outside to try and drive this management, particularly because of the compressed timelines. And but we are making a provision, because we cannot act as if this is not a reality. We're making a provision for disengagement, hence the highlight in red that was asked by the member, why do you have the red in human resources? That's because we're making a provision. We've done a modeling exercise to say that you are likely to have a few disengagements, which may lead to some form of payments. The engagement with the private sector, I think, this slide, again, I've put it up because, as I said, our strategic reorientation is around the strategic market sector engagement, and that is what we're really saying. We're saying that we need to get closer to the market, and therefore, going forward, TIA is going to make a concerted effort to bring the market into the picture of innovation, particularly because we believe that innovation has to happen and has an end at the firm level, not at the at where the research happens, but at the firm level. And therefore, as a key driver of our strategy, we will bring in the market. And it talks to the question that that the chairperson has asked about why we do not highlight issues around backward integration, around the forms of industrialization that we've seen, particularly with the Asian tigers post-World War II. I think there are programs within the TFC that are looking at that, such as the technology localization programs. We are also hoping that, and I mentioned the issue of synergies and leverage from combining all of this portfolio with Tunisan and the AMCS being manufacturing programs. That is where we see the biggest value of our strategic investment portfolio. I made the mention, and what we've done here, we've given examples in the strategic investment portfolio. These are examples to demonstrate the concept, but that is exactly what we're hoping to do with the SIP, to look at things that can be backwardly integrated, that can be rapidly pushed into the market because of the opportunity of public or advanced market commitments, whether that's by public procurement and so on and so forth, to address some of our immediate challenges. And the Itemba is an example of that. It's given here as an example, and it's only in this business plan because it is one of our investee companies. So two of our entities, PowerFed and LifeLab, have invested heavily in that, and we have control over it. We cannot use other instruments where we do not really have control, but we've used it as an example. We do hope that in the not-too-distant future we'll come back and present the strategic investment portfolio business plan or project plan, which we hope is going to address the issue of where do we want to go as an organization, how do we begin to address the challenges of the NSI in moving across that innovation chasm and the funding value of that. It is going to be embedded in that strategic investment portfolio. The issue around whether the solar and other sectors that we're looking at, I can't say in terms of the high impact project. I cannot say what we don't know at this point in time, but one of the fundamental drivers of that project is around addressing South African national priorities. It's our belief that in a developing country context, the priorities that are set by a developmental state tend to also translate themselves into viable markets, and therefore we would be amiss if we were to miss that opportunity. So some of the national objectives that we look at around food production, rural development, and so on and so forth, they are real market opportunities. They can be driven by viable private sector players. And therefore, that's one of the fundamental pillars of that. In terms of the consolidation that was raised, whether we'll be throwing out staff or... It's true that some of the programs and investments will be terminated simply because once you've consolidated, then you've got to make cold calls, investment calls, to talk, to say that does this fit within my new parameters, does this, is this going to deliver what I want to deliver, and therefore those calls will be made at an appropriate time. We cannot make them upfront without going through the process of analyzing this. When will the migration be complete? And I think the question can be addressed together with the question on we are currently recruiting and interviewing while at the same time with the migration process. The migration process is divided into several streams. One stream that has been accelerated and prioritized is the one of developing an organizational structure and therefore do the recruitment. And we think that once you have people that you can hang onto that structure, they are going to drive the other elements of that. Another part of their migration process is around projects and investments. Those are being migrated within a legalistic and financial framework so that you manage the risk in a much more structured way. The other one talks to the brand issues that another member raised. You have to migrate the brands properly because these entities have their own brands. Some of them have been existing for 10 years, and therefore you don't want to lose the brand equity that has been developed. Coupled with the fact that one of the strategic objectives of the tier is to build a culture of innovation. So as we develop a strong positive brand for tier, we must align that to building the culture of innovation without being forward and giving ourselves sort of priority place in the system. We do think there's an opportunity to associate the tier brand with innovation itself. And that's why building a culture of innovation is one of our strategic pillars. So the whole issue of brand development, brand migration, is getting its the necessary treatment within the migration process. So the migration process has a number of work streams. some of which are prioritized so that they can drive the next milestone or the next work stream. And so we hope, as I said, to be able to have a structure that will then embark on the process of brand development, for example, of migrating the investment, of creating the strategic investment portfolio, and so on and so forth. And I hope in developing our brand, we'll be able to make innovation a sexy subject. In terms of licensing, in our environment, when we talk about licensing, we're really talking about licensing of intellectual property as opposed to approval of drugs and so on and so forth. The technology stations program, as they are currently structured, they do have a mission of assisting SMMEs with prototyping and creating manufacturing capabilities in those SMMEs, and they are based at the universities of technology. So their modality, as you speak, and over the past several years, has really been focused on empowering the SMMEs to manufacture. For example, there's one in chemicals which assists small companies in developing formulas for detergent making, and they go so far as to design the small factories that are required for manufacturing those detergents. So they are already in that place. The challenge is really about massifying them and increasing the impact of those in increasing the efficiencies of the SMEs.
Come in here to thank you for giving us this opportunity. We are a new agency, and I have to confess that when we were appointed, we were not alert to the fact that, in fact, we were being asked to be part of something that was yet to be. Yes, there was a business plan presented to Parliament. The pleading part has a very real reason. In setting up that budget, there was no attention paid to the issue of the setup cost. And that's a very real gap in the budget. And that has to be addressed. There also has to be a serious conversation in Treasury about the status of this entity in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, so that we really don't end up with an embarrassment which you wouldn't want us to be in. But I do want, Mr. Chairman, for you to join the board which asked me to mention this specifically. Dr. Msomi has really acted as a true good citizen of this country, because what he has taken on originally was asked to be a board member, and of course the we didn't pay enough attention to the fact that it takes time to actually appoint a CEO. But you can't appoint a CEO until you've got the systems into which you appoint the CEO. So we ended up with a cart and a horse, and he was very willing to be both a cart and a horse. And he's done a fantastic job, and I really would like you, as members of Parliament, to bear that in mind. We will make some mistakes, but we will try and do the best that we can. We are very well supported by Science and Technology, and the Minister is very supportive of us, and the DG and his staff are also very supportive of us. We are very conscious of the language question that you raised. Who is our audience? Our audience is ordinary Mr. and Mrs. Saraf. What we are aware of is that we need to build a culture, a new culture that makes innovation sexy. That's our job. And I think that job will have to be undertaken in conjunction with the education system, the parents, everybody, including the firm. Our firm has to be more competitive compared to the rest. That's why we ended up losing our textile industry. And so we need to be ahead of the pack. So our audience is everybody. But we are going to have to learn the language that we will get across to as many people as possible, as well as getting people to want to use this language of science and innovation. So I thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Attention, please. I'm addressing. I wanted you to listen very well because you were pleading, and so I want you to hear that your pleas have been they have been heard. We understand very well, and that is actually the aim of entities or whatever stakeholders that we deal with have to come to Parliament, because in Parliament we are not actually necessarily police, but we are actually the public representative that highlights some of the things that we will find out, you know, they will ask, but why are they not doing this? But why are they not doing so? We also highlight those things representing the general, sphere of the public. That's why you have people saying that. Also, the language, if you come here, we'll also highlight that the language is a bit high, we don't hear, because that's what we'll find on the ground. So, and what I was only also highlighting is that while the presentation is fine, you have also got to look into very important approaches that have happened in the world. Because we learn from globalization and interacting with the world. In particular, some lessons that have happened in China and in their corporate system of innovation, the South Korean approach, their success story, the Hong Kong. There are many of these approaches that they have used that have made them successful. Actually, fundamentally, in Watia, I would expect actually that you will have what we call innovation management framework, which is based particularly on the number, I mean the population size of a country, plus the number of people going to school, which is human capital development. So those are fundamental pillars of how you manage your innovation system, especially in terms of translating technology into business. So these are very important things. These are lessons of many countries. You know, if you talk to Japanese, they are saying that in the 60s, they had to go to the States to steal some of these innovation ideas and re-engineer them into innovation things, and they became what Japan is today. So it's very important to understand where we're going and where we're coming and where we're going. And so as a new entity, it is a parliament that must give you that support. So your pleas have been heard. Oh, there are still two questions. All right.
I need clarity on the licensing this question. And you said you don't actually license. It's related to intellectual property rights. Now, my colleague asked the question, who owns that? Following on from that, back to Itemba, you say it's an entity that you can control, and therefore you've identified that that pharmaceutical to produce HIV drugs. Now, how does that, is it generics? Is it, what's the relationship with regard to TRIPS? What about free enterprise and competition? And at the back of my mind, you know, who's got a vested interest there? And we'll be getting something out of it. So, can you please respond?
Thank you. I just want to understand the process of funding an innovative little company. There was somewhere now that I've wondered, I can't find it. There's a breakdown of what kind of funding would come from the innovation. From TIA into these companies, like loans, shares. Will TIA actually own shares in these companies? Will TIA actually expect to make a profit from those companies? Will these companies, once they become established, be able to spin themselves off into another entity and pay you back some fees or whatever it is? What is the process? Will they always be part of TIA? Can they go off and become independent? Will other companies, international investors, as soon as this thing takes off, be able to buy shares in them? And will they want to buy shares if government is a shareholder? If we could just sort of work through that scenario for me, please. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chairperson. And let me thank the entity for the informative presentation. The question that I wanted to ask has been covered. It was in relation to the CEO. But what I would like to find out, I heard them talking about drugs, the TV drugs and HIV. I believe that our people, especially the traditional healers, are also so innovative. What I would like to find out is what relationship that the entity have with the traditional healers and their medicines. Thanks.
Over to you. You can ask the myself to respond.
Okay. The answer to the first one around licensing, one way of putting it is that when you, for example, develop a drug, we're talking about innovative drugs. In other words, you're not talking about generics. There are several pieces of IP, sometimes running into hundreds, around process, around the chemical entity itself, around the mode of operation of that chemical entity. There's any number of them. So let's speak of licensing. And that's why I made the point earlier on that generally no single company, especially at a startup level, is able to have all of the required intellectual property pieces. Some companies may be doing stuff around assays and so on and so forth. And therefore, there's a need, if you want to fast track or accelerate the development of drugs, for companies to in-license technologies from elsewhere. And those are in license using a structured legal framework with royalty payments or whatever the cost of licensing that is. And this is a modality that is used by even the biggest pharmaceutical companies. And that is what we're talking about. ICHEMBA, when we speak of ICHEMBA, ICHEMBA is one of the organizations that has been funded over the past 4 or 5 years by two entities in the biotechnology space. They have developed capabilities around TB, around HIV drug development, medicinal chemistry. They've licensed technologies from Emory universities and from some small biotech internationally, and they've also got their own in-house developed technologies, and they are focused on product development. And that is why they, if they are going to be able to accelerate the development of new drugs, they are not generic, they are new drugs. They currently do not exist. They have to in-license IP from other sources, because the challenge of developing that IP may take them years, where they already have been developed and they are mature elsewhere, and they may not even require those huge upfront payments. That's the context within which we define this thing. As to how TIA, whether it owns equity, whether it will own equity, we are currently doing a project which we call the Investment Policy and Management Framework. The reason being that we're inheriting a number of entities who have different investment policies, who use different instruments ranging from grant funding all the way to quasi-equity instruments like the VC or private equity would do. And not knowing what needs to be done and trying to address the challenge of innovation culture, we've embarked on this project since the beginning of last month, and we're trying to analyze the funding environment and the funding ecosystem with regards to the innovation culture. What are the challenges? What are the best instruments that can be used? What is best practice? What could be the unintended consequences? We're also doing a baselining as well as a benchmarking with global counterparts who have done this before us and who are successfully doing it. So I can't really give you an answer on whether we're going to be using equity or its grant funding or its royalty payment until such time that we've finalized that project. I think we are all aware of the fact that it's a massive challenge, and we cannot go into this thing and say we'll use equity or quasi-equity or grant. It's probably going to be a mixture of instruments that would be tailor-made for each case. However, we also need to take into consideration that we are precluded by the PFMA in participating in other sort of quasi-commercial activities where we would own equity. So there is also that balancing act of doing what is right. But we are inheriting a whole portfolio of things at this point in time. So we do sit with grants, with royalty, with quasi-equity, and all sorts of things, loans. And we are not sure in terms of the legal standing of all of those things. Hence the disclosure on investment framework.
Do you have any idea
when
you have a decision on the
service? I think it should be by June. Okay. Yeah, by June. We've been doing it. I think we've set ourselves about 20 weeks to finalize it and then taking it back to the board. And the board can then make policy decisions based on empirical evidence and based on the need to comply with legislation and our scheduling requirements.
And I think on that score, we will definitely be looking at international practice, learning from other countries, because clearly we are starting this thing in an environment where we don't have necessarily prototypes in South Africa of a tier-like structure. So we will have to learn from other countries how they do it. I just want to respond to the issue of indigenous knowledge and whether we use it or not, we do. But what we don't do, in the same way that we don't necessarily have relationships with individual researchers, there are centers in our work, in our framework, we indicated how we work with higher education institutions and the sisters in the science system. We will be harvesting whatever information has been gathered by people who are specifically working with traditional healers to understand some of that indigenous knowledge and much of it, which is useful in terms of innovation, will be embedded in whatever area, depending on where in the sector it will fit in. If it fits into the health sector with specific advantages, there's no reason why we wouldn't use it.
Okay, thank you very much. I think members, all your questions have been responded to. And I think also we have, in fact, overstayed our suggested time. I can see now some honorable members are thinking of their other appointments with their girlfriends. So, yeah. I think it's a very good start. I think so far, insofar as I've listened to members, it looks like a very good start to the interaction today. But it looks like that we will have to be inviting you more often than not so that you keep us updated and we also give you some very useful inputs to develop this entity. It's a very important entity. It's actually many. Actually, I think the first experience, if you can go to Singapore, they have got this very same hub. They have put together all the system so that people talk across bridges, across each other, even if they are not related to innovation. Even IT is all in the same place. So it's a very, very good, it will be a good experience to go and see how they have developed innovation in Singapore and many other countries, but I'm just talking because I participated in Japan in the kind of a conference where we met with the some Singaporean, actually. One of the person running that he advises the premier of Singapore is free, very top professor from MIT, but from Singapore. He gave one of the best papers in that conference in Japan. So I think it's very, very important. I learned some of these things there myself. So with that, I am thinking that we've come to the end of our session for today, and thank you very much for coming all the way here. We hope we'll be interacting. Our program is very congested in Parliament, but we will find a space for you because you need to be working very close to us in order to get into a correct path, because it is only through technology where we can have economic stability, and it is only through economic stability where we can have political stability of the country. So I think this is a very important entity for us. Thank you very much. Members, we just have a report to adopt after. I think it will take us about 5 minutes, and then we will be free. Just an oversight report, and we need for it to be presented to the National Assembly, we need a correct. Yeah.
Mid last week, we discussed briefly the NRS full charge thing.
Yes, yes.
So I'd like to discuss when we.
I'll respond to you. We had I did discuss this matter with the minister. I'll give you also a report. Yeah, we'll discuss it, but I will have to look at the item today with you. Having been supported, therefore, I think I will have to take the report to the National Assembly for adoption. Thank you very much. There is I just need to sign it here in front of you so that you know that I'm signing it on my behalf. So that nobody can say that it is only.
Yeah.
All right. Honourable
Chief? And I think that we must forget here before we go that we need to send flowers, cards, condolences to Anna and wishing her a speedy recovery. To Anna Nyama, to Aki's here. Wish her well. And perhaps also a message from us to Lindiwe on Ms. Lindiwe on, you know, wishing her well through her. That we're thinking of her at this rather stressful time for her.
Thank you very much. That's very important. If our members of the committee have got some kind of very difficult situation, we need to support them. I think that's a very good proposal. It should be the culture of this committee. Thank you very much.
I need a hole in my head, but I need a dream.
No, that's all.
No, I mean, I thought he was saying, I think I was just saying.